Welcome to episode number 19 with Ulla Hald, the CEO and co-founder of Faves App. Their company is revolutionizing the way retailers buy and keep track of merchandise. We are so excited to have her on the show, all the way from one of my favorite places in the world, Copenhagen, Denmark.
You're listening to the Real Capitalist Podcast. We are a global community building strong female icons in the startup ecosystem. Each week, we interview a female founder or venture capitalist with tangible advice to help bring your goals to the next level. Here is your host, Courtney Real, and let's dive into today's interview.
Hi, everybody. I'm so excited to introduce to you Ulla Hald. She is the founder and CEO of Faves. Ulla, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
So for our listeners who haven't got to meet you before, give us a little background on you, what your company does, and your mission to take over the world.
Okay. So my name is Ulla and I am from Denmark. I am the co-founder and CEO of Faves, which is a fashion tech company. We are helping retailers make the best buying decisions for their business. The way it works today for the retailers is when they choose their products into the store, they look at hundreds of different styles. And to try to remember what they buy, they take pictures, they make notes in their notebooks, and they keep track in Excel. But they lose track, so they end up making redundant purchases or forgetting things. And we are helping them do something about that.
I love that. And just to give the listeners a little bit of a background on how we met, I swear I'm going to rename the name of this podcast to something like The Ladies Room, because Ulla and I actually met in the bathroom at Launch Festival here in San Francisco. She was here pitching Jason Calacanis, doing some really awesome things, and we ended up chatting, getting to know each other, and loved what she was doing, so I knew I had to have her on the podcast. But I feel like all of my guests lately I've met somehow in a bathroom or some awkward Uber ride or something like that. So maybe I need to update the name of the show. But anyways, let's get to the story. So Ulla, tell us a little bit about growing up in Denmark. Did you know that you wanted to be an entrepreneur and chase these tracks? What's that journey like to get up to this point of where you are?
Yeah, no, the short answer is definitely no. I was brought up in a very traditional family. My parents are both working in social care. They are taking care of or have been working with kids and young people that are mentally challenged. That was not part of my path to move into technology or to come to United States or to start a company. I went to public school in Denmark. And when I graduated from high school, I went to United States as an au pair. And I fell in love and started to go to university here. And originally, I started to study economics, but was introduced to a computer science class. And it just clicked. I really, really loved it. And then I transferred on to UC Santa Cruz and studied computer science. And then one thing led to another. I worked at Apple, and I left Apple to start working in companies in San Francisco in the digital, the first companies that were doing websites for companies. And that's how I got started, working with teams to solve communications and sales problems using digital or technology, actually.
How interesting, and to be a part of those first kind of initial companies, especially Apple, and designing how their digital content looked like. I could imagine that would be quite difficult. What is kind of those roles, or what did you learn from digital content that you think is helpful in what you're doing today?
I think what really I got a passion for early on, and that was definitely from the time at Apple, was to use technology and to solve complex problems, but making it super easy and elegant and simple in the solution, so it was accessible to the most people. And that passion has stayed with me ever since. So it's to present something that can be difficult to grasp in a really easy to understand manner.
Yeah, and I think that skill is so valuable in most careers, and especially as an entrepreneur, of creating maybe a new product or a new service and how the heck to explain it to people often can be very difficult. So you get this role as digital content, and then you move over back to Denmark, or have you stayed in San Francisco? What was that transition?
So that so I actually ended up staying in the San Francisco Bay Area for 18 years before moving back to Denmark. And then I moved back and I got a job leading development for online sales and marketing for a telecom company. And then I left to join a digital agency. And after that, I met my co-founder. I was introduced to my co-founder that had this idea. She's been working in retail and had seen there was this need, there was this problem that was not solved when the buyers in retails were buying all this stuff. And she was telling me about the problem and the idea that she had. And it was one of those moments where you really just saw this light bubble, you know, this thing like amazing moment. We just looked at each other and it sparked. I was like, wow, we can do something about that. So then I started doing a little research to find out if there was any good solutions out there, and there were none. So then we just started getting to know each other, and then we dove in and we just started, you know, prototyping on paper, going to retailers to validate, does this make sense? You know, how is this really a problem? And back and forth, back and forth. And then in the end, we ended up hiring a programmer to join us to actually start programming. And then we started with a beta. Like 2 years ago, we came out with a beta. And last year, we launched our first version in January last year.
Oh, wow. And I love that you took paper models to the retailers to say, hey, is this something you would use? Because I think oftentimes that's so missed in companies of just, hey, what's the bare minimum we can do to figure out if people would use this product? So I love that you mentioned that of, hey, we just took it simple and started talking to people, because often there's this persona that you have to have everything put together perfectly in the most perfect pitch deck to go talk to anyone, where in fact, you can draw something on a piece of paper and just say, hey, is this something you would use? Do you have something? And start asking those questions. And in fact, most customers love to be engaged in those first initial product development because they want a product that's going to help them, you know, organize what they're buying from retailers and whatnot. So I love that you guys started that way. So did your co-founder have experience in the retail side? What was her background there?
She does. She came from actually retail. So she had been working in retail, you know, working in a store selling clothes, but also supporting the owner of the business when she was doing her buying. And so she was looking at this thing, this can be done smarter. And she also studied digital solution design at the university. So she was tapping into both worlds and realizing something could be done. We could be creating a tool that actually helped solve these problems. So she was the perfect fit there.
Yeah, a good combination. Mm-hmm. So what was it like to be in Copenhagen and start this company? Was there a startup community that you were going to find resources from? Were you going to online? What does that kind of ecosystem look like, or did it look like when you guys were building this company in Copenhagen?
It's growing. That ecosystem didn't so much exist 5 years ago, but it's definitely growing now. I would say that we didn't so much partake in that. I think because we are older entrepreneurs, we had established network of already other people in the business or entrepreneurs. So we were able to just kind of use our connections to connect with our team members. So the first hire in, our iOS guy, Sin, and he's amazing, by the way, just really the best. We found him because he had been working at another startup, and I knew the founder of that startup. And they were ending their startup at that time, and so he was available to work. So I was able to tap into that talent and get him on board. And that was serendipity, but it was also through because of the network that we had established.
I think that's so important. It's kind of who you know, not what you know, to some degree, especially in entrepreneurship. Of good entrepreneurs can build a good team, and that makes a good company. So I love that you mentioned that. So walk us through this next couple steps. So you have a few customers on your beta product. Mm-hmm. You're testing out things. Are you also fundraising at the time? What's that process look like for you and the company?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you. So we were building the beta. While we were building the beta product, we applied for Innovation Fund in Denmark, and we got it. We got it twice. We ended up getting $90,000 through that, and that comes without any ask to shares of your company. So that was really good because that meant we could actually pay our iOS developer. We didn't, of course, sell. We didn't take a salary ourselves, but we were able to pay to get him on board. And then we built a product using that fund or those funds. And then we launched a product and then we started to look for funds. And it was really not easy to get in Denmark. And then a very good friend of ours was telling me about Jason Calacanis, and here, who is a big angel investor in San Francisco. And Jason has what he calls a founder university, where he invites founders to come for 2 days of intense talks about all sorts of things related to founding a company. And I joined that and I got to pitch for him. And he was impressed by what we're doing and invited us into his launch incubator program. So we were here for the summer, and he actually was the first money in, external money as an investor in. And once you have Jason Calacanis on board, it opened up the opportunity for other angels to get in. And that's how we were able to raise our initial pre-seed round that ended here end of last year.
That's awesome. So let's talk about going through that accelerator a little bit. Mm-hmm. What was that process like? What do you think the biggest takeaways were from the launch accelerator? And what would be your advice kind of looking back on maybe how to pick an accelerator? What are the main benefits? What do you wish you would have known before diving into the accelerator?
The biggest gain for this accelerator is being put, it's just thrown out and pitching every week in front of a bunch of VCs, or be put in front of VCs every week pitching your company and getting all the tough questions asked to you. So for the next time you meet the investors the following week, you're more and more prepared, and you know what's being asked and what's being expected of you. So it was incredibly opportunity to connect with so many possible investors. We were very early, so none of them were really a good match for us at this stage, but it means that we are more prepared for the next round. So that was really good. The network and the just honing your presentation skills and just putting yourself out there. I mean, it's scary. And being forced to do it. And then another thing is the camaraderie with the other startups in the cohort are just priceless. Even after we ended, we have contact and we have each other's backs. We know what we're going through. So it's that's gold.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I think out of the most accelerators I've seen, just that cohort of founders and having other people to say, how did you write this email? How did that investor meeting go? And just having that group of people who's also at a very similar stage, maybe not the same vertical, but same stage of business is so helpful.
It really is.
Almost more on a mental note of just, okay, I'm not the only one going crazy here. So I love that. So let's talk about your team a little bit. So you and your co-founder met at the very beginning. You added your iOS developer. Who else have you added to your team, and what has that journey been like?
So we added our CTO and an iOS developer. And then the last hiring is a sales guy that we got on board, Thomas, in December. So now we are five. So the first really new hire, that was our iOS developer, Sin. That we came in that we didn't know. Our CTO is, full disclosure, also my husband. So I knew him very well. We met at Apple back in the 90s. So that has, so he knew us, my co-founder and me, very well, and just was a really good catch to get into the company. He started out not planning to be working full time, but has ended up more than working full time. So that was brilliant to get him on board. And then our iOS developer was again like the guy that was introduced through a common friend. And our sales guy, we have been courting him for the last half year. He comes from the industry and is an excellent sales guy. and just been a really good good guy throughout his career. So people actually continue to take his calls and respond to his mails when he contacts them. So he's a good catch.
Yeah, that's good to have a salesperson who gets emails responded to is important. So talk about this a little bit. Have you guys thought about or started building a company culture? I know that's become a very popular topic within startup ecosystem of when's the right spot, you know, to build culture and start thinking about that. Is that something that's on your guys' horizon?
I think it is by action, not so much by writing, but the way that we interact and care for each other. That is what we do. But we haven't written down any company mission statements of how to behave or anything like that, or how we want our company to be. But it's something, the way that we act, I guess the people that we have chosen into the company are just a natural extension of how we started and who we are as people. But it's a good point, though. I mean, it's just that we can't expect that when we are, 10 or 15 or 30 or more, right?
Yeah, and I think that's so true. I like that you said that they're a natural extension of how you guys started, because I think that's really how culture is built, is finding people who have similar values and missions as you do. Maybe they're not written down, but sometimes, you know, people have missions that are written down that their company doesn't really follow. It's really more in the action. So I love that you mention hiring people that are just in the same zone and ready to follow the same mission as their original two co-founders. So tell me this, what was the process like of leaving the Launch Accelerator? What did you guys do after that? Raising money, what did you go do with that capital? Did you stay here in San Francisco? Talk about that process a little bit.
Yeah, when we finished up, I moved back to Denmark. And the biggest difference is that we were able to hire a sales guy getting into the team. So our focus has really been to try and accelerate our acquisition of customers. And that was the main use of our funds, is actually to hire that additional full-time person in. And then also use the capital to hire some technical development team, outsource team to help us build part of our product. So we went back, but we have been staying in contact. So again, like the network that was created, we have once a month, there is like check-in calls for the people that are able to join in, where we just discuss different topics. And some of us are, you know, texting daily, just checking in, see how things are going and supporting each other.
That's awesome. And so going back to Denmark, starting to hire on people, then you're also ramping up customer acquisition. What has that process been like? What has that taught you? What ways have you guys found really successful in acquiring customers? Which ways have you either failed or learned from? What's that experience been like?
It's been really interesting. I think what we were a little bit naive in thinking we will build it and they will come, in some sense, because I think we were underestimating that introducing a new category like our product is, it's just hard work, because you can't just say, hey, exchange A with B, because A doesn't really exist. So that has been a bigger challenge than we expected. So our product is an app. And it's a low price product. It's a B2B tool that is not for a high price, but we have had to do a lot of high touch sales in order to get people introduced and understand what we're offering. So this is something I expect will change and has starting to change over time, that we're able to actually generate leads just by merely doing online targeted ads and have people download and onboard on their own, or we'll do onboarding online with them. But it started with really high touch, and we are lessening that now, or reducing that now. But it was definitely a surprise that it was not going faster.
Yeah, and I would imagine, is that because the customers who use your product, these retailers, are not used to using tech in their company, and this is, you know, I've never had an app for this before, so it's an education point, or is it something else? What do you think, what's been the little harder to adopt there?
I think it's a combination of both. It's the idea that they don't have a tool today that does, I mean, they don't have one tool that does exactly what we're offering, right? Today they have They rely on the camera, they have a notebook, and they have Excel. So the notion of actually having a tool that does all of that for them is something that you need to tell them about, or it exists. So that's a new category, and that's introducing that to them is new. And then you're right. I mean, they are not, some of them, the small boutiques are not incredibly tech savvy. They don't have a planning division or a tech department behind them. So they're used to doing everything on their own, and then adding something on top of it can be quite a challenge for them, even though that this is supposed to reduce the burden of what they do. And it does do that. But just having the mind space of listening, taking that in, is a challenge.
Yeah, I could imagine. I would assume that this has kind of a network effect of, once one person starts using it, they are encouraging, you know, team members to use it. And then if a certain seller is on it, then buyers start to get on it. Is that kind of the vision of being able to build out a network effect with the Yes. application?
Absolutely. And we are seeing it now from multiple angles. So one thing is that the retailers notice other retailers, especially when they're at the fair. So we'll see retailers using this thing. So there is the shoulder virality, where people say, what is that? And then we also have the brands telling other buyers that, you know, so-and-so is using Faves. And then we have agents representing, or reps representing these brands. And the reason they're doing it is because they're finding that the buyers, or the retailers that are using the Faves app, are better prepared, right? So these retailers are using it. They know exactly what they're buying. They know for how much. So they don't end up having this negative conversation with the brands like, oh, how much did I buy? Or what did I buy? Or I need to decommit on this because, you know, I bought something else, or, you know, so we are helping them have better conversations between the buyers in retail and the brands offering the products to the retailers. So that has been good. So being able to, we are starting to see that network effect now. And also many of them, or a number of our buyers, have been posting on the Instagram saying, hey, I'm buying with Faves. I'm at Magic buying with Faves, or, you know, at the fashion, different fashion fairs. So it's really cool that way. And that's what actually, and that's without us, I've even encouraged it. But I think they're feeling empowered. So that's nice. So once they start seeing their colleagues in the business using it, that helps actually convince them that there is something out there.
Yeah, I think that's so true. Having that first set of loyal fans who's so yeah. excited to share what you're building without you even maybe prompting them,
yeah.
especially sharing it via social media or sharing it within their network, is so powerful, especially with a marketplace type app where it has those network effects. So that's a really good tipping point to see. So yeah. let's talk about this. So now we're in the start of 2019, which is crazy to believe. What is kind of the future of the company? What's the next steps? What are you guys most excited about going forward?
So the primary focus for us right now is really just to increase our customer base. We need to raise another fund. I want to get the C funding going late summer, early fall. And in order to be ready for that, we need to get our MRR up. So it's really about focusing, getting customers in. That is the primary focus. And in order to get that up, it's also about saying, what are the opportunities in the product that we can help us charge more? You know, can we add more additional value that they are willing to pay more, or like different customers will be paying for? And so we are looking at a couple of enhancements. So turning our Faves product into an enterprise solution also that is connected into the retailers. Existing systems, so like that POS or that ERP systems, with some kind of API connection. That is something that we're looking at this year.
Nice. And my next question for you is, do you plan on raising that seed round here in the States, in Denmark, a little bit of both? What does that look like if you were to go raise money in Denmark? Is it still quite difficult at the seed stage?
It is. And I think it's going to be a combination of both. I'm betting that 80% of it will come from from the US. And then that might be potential money in Copenhagen. But it seems like the funding, when we talk about products like this, it's much better to find the funding here, because people here, our investors here, understand that you want this company to actually grow. You want to see it be a $1 billion company, right? So therefore, you come in early and you give a little money. You don't expect to get 40% of the company for $100,000. That's what you do in Denmark. Many of the investors are just not very used to investing in startups. So they will argue like, oh, when are you breaking even? When do I see my money back? You know, I can build this for $200,000. Why should I go ahead and, you know, invest this and only get this little amount? So it's a whole different dialogue. Here, investors understand that to keep founders going forward, that they need to retain a big portion, because else the founders may quit and leave the company. So they're a lot more, they're thinking more long-term and big opportunity, whereas in Denmark, it's not that way. So you see many of the big companies that are done very well, the Danish companies, actually end up going to the States. So they start out small, so in Denmark, and then once they grow to a certain stage, they end up going and ending up being a Delaware corp with U.S. funding.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think perspective on both founders and both investors in an ecosystem really determine what's able to be created. And I think that's one thing Silicon Valley has done really well, and why there's a lot of large companies here. It's just that understanding of what it looks like to be a seed company in a Series A, and kind of almost outlines of exactly what to invest at what stage. So that's really interesting to see. And I think it's also interesting to see ecosystem like Denmark and other places around the world evolve in entrepreneurship and investing. There's definitely probably a little bit more enhanced and more savvy investors that are coming along, or different funds developing. But I think it's definitely interesting to see what gets modeled after Silicon Valley. So Ula, the next question, I would love to dive into your journey of starting this company. What is one thing you wish you would have known from the beginning, now being about 2 years into the company? What is one thing you'd go back and tell yourself?
I've been thinking about that. There is so much. I wish I had known that there are people out there that don't necessarily have your own value system, that may want to take advantage of you as a startup, and you need to get a different perspective before you jump in. When you're starting out, it's so easy to be a little bit, maybe not desperate, but like you really want to move this thing forward. And you can be easily, you know, jump into bed with people that maybe are not the right ones. So be mindful and get second opinions before jumping in and making quick decisions on something that can impact your company going forward. I think that was one of the things we were able to clean up. But early on, we had somebody who came in and was going to help us get money, and he wanted certain shares of the company, and he ended up not getting the money, but still wanting shares. So we ended up having to pay him out. And it was just not, it wasn't pretty, but I'm glad it happened then and not now. That mistake I'm not going to do again. But it's when you're starting out and you need the money to go on, or it's really easy to just make some bad decisions that can impact your company going forward. So whenever it relates to shares of a company, be extra careful, is what I would tell myself.
I think that's so true and so wise. And I think, you know, taking the time to research whether a cliff period is right for you, vesting schedule, knowing all those things can save you so much pain in the long run. And just really getting to know, is this the right person for my team? Because it's a hard lesson, unfortunately, to learn. So I love that you brought that up. Let's talk about this. What has surprised you, or kind of how have you grown as a person over the last couple of years starting this company?
I think the one thing I noticed the other day was thinking, like, every moment of the day, I'm thinking about this company and how to advance it. And I do it not out of chore, but something I really want to. It's so important to me. And then what I was thinking back, when I was working at another startup as an employee, I thought, I mean, I was a pretty good employee and I loved what I was doing. But I remember being on a flight with the CEO of the company, who I absolutely adore. And he was working. And I was like, oh my God, I just love sitting on a plane, not doing anything. But now I can't do that because, well, I mean, I do, but I've worked then on faves because it's so important to me. So what the realization is that you can, being a founder yourself is so different than being a, you know, an employee or even a good employee. You can't assume that everybody has that same 100%. You know, I'm going to drive this company forward, and every moment I'm awake, this is my the top of my mind, and it was just that was just something I thought of the other day. How that was interesting. I had never thought of it in that way before. I just always thought that was crazy that, you know, when people were founding the companies that, you know, that they had nothing else in their mind. But I can totally see now that, you know, it is that, but it's out of joy. It's not because somebody is telling me to. I really want to do this.
I love that. And I think that kind of founder's brain of it never turns off. Of always just kind of thinking and, oh, what about, like, you see inspiration going for a walk or talking with someone, or, you know, you see something on TV and it makes sparks something about the company. And I think that's so true. And it's important to remember while building your company. And I love that you mentioned that not every employee is as obsessed with the company as you are. That has to come from the founder themselves. So I love that you mentioned that. So the next question I have for you is, there are days as entrepreneurs, as much as we love our companies, where stuff gets hard and you kind of like, oh man, I can't do this today. You want to fold up shop. What are tools you've learned to keep pushing when the time gets hard?
The way I'm doing it is that I give myself that space. I say, okay, let me go. I will go for a walk. So where we live in Copenhagen, there's a forest. I go through the forest. I go into the water. It's like a 5-kilometer walk. It's a little hour. And just taking that time, not bringing the phone, I'm a new person when I come back. And I've just managed to, even when I tell myself, don't think about it. Of course, I'll keep thinking about it. And by the time I come home, I have the renewed energy, or I have a proposed solution, or, you know, something always materializes. And I feel so much better. So for me, it's giving myself that break and say, okay, and now it's time.
I love that. Going on a walk in Copenhagen is one of my favorite things in the world to do. So I wish I could do that every day. I'm quite jealous. I love Copenhagen. So that's a perfect answer. So one thing, the last question is, what do you want other women to learn from your story? I mean, you've traveled all over the world building this company, working at really interesting companies in your past career life, and just really a well-rounded career and life, I think. So I'd love for you to share, if you could stand on a soapbox and tell women listening anything and they had to soak it in, what would you love to say to them?
I will say follow, trust your instinct and just take one step at a time and just put one foot forward. And just really just jump in there. The world was built by people, and you are a person, and I am a person, and you are the one who has the idea and passion to do it. So just do it, and trust that you can do it. And really, just one step at a time, and be honest with you, and don't compromise on your values. I think that's, you know, just be you. I think that's the most important part in everything that you do.
I love that. And I love that you mentioned the world was built by people. I think that's so important to remember, is everything that we see, someone created and someone had an idea for and took the first step and built. And so I love that remembrance of that, hey, everything else was built by people and just normal people. So I love that. So let's get to know you a little bit. We have some fun fire round questions. So first question, tacos or pizza?
Oh, it depends on the day, but today would be pizza.
Oh, good answer. I think this week was National Pizza Day or something was this week, so maybe a little inspiration there. Who was your first celebrity crush?
You know, I think it's going to totally date me, but I think it was Donny Osmond.
Oh, that's awesome. Favorite holiday?
Oh, it is. It's chilling in southern Italy by the Amalfi Coast, laying down there on the beach in one of the sun chairs, listening to a podcast and just being.
Oh, that sounds awesome. The beach and the podcast, two of my favorite things. Go to karaoke song.
It's going to be ABBA.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I love it. Favorite app?
You know what? This sounds boring, but I really like my bank app. Just
I mean, if you got money in the bank, that's a good app.
But then also Intercom, because I'm able to communicate and with our customers. So I mean, like the two high, the ones. And then I'll do like one for pleasure plug. That's a Vivino app. It's an app where you scan the wine label and you can see, how do other people rate this wine. It's really great. We're standing in the supermarket. It's like, okay, I want some wine. And you're like, oh, is this good? Is this good? And you just scan the label and then it comes up. And it's just, thousands and thousands of users that have scanned this label and, wine and given feedback. So, and rated it. So that's I really like that one.
I love that. I never know how to pick out wine. I'm not a very good wine connoisseur. I thought it was just kind of like a price thing that you pick a budget and maybe one with a pretty label. So this is going to make me look like an expert. So I'm excited to try it.
Good.
What is your very first job?
So my very first job, like actual work, that was... I was managed shipments. So I was picking up posters for a production company in Denmark and taking the boat to Sweden to drop it off.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great job.
Yeah.
What is the best compliment that someone could give you?
The one I really like is when people say that I am good at bringing people together and getting stuff done, and letting smart people do their best,
I love that.
Yeah.
That's a good entrepreneurial skill. One person, dead or alive, you'd love to have dinner with?
Ruth Ginsburg.
I love it. And then last question, one thing you would love to check off your bucket list?
Oh, do I just pick one? I would love to, and this is like one of those things, I know it's probably on a lot of people's bucket list, but I would love to go to Machu Picchu. I think it just looks gorgeous.
I would love to do that as well. It looks gorgeous and looks like a fun hike.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I think there are so many good nuggets. Where can people find you and find Faves and follow you in your journey?
So people can go to faves.fashion. So FAVES.fashion to learn about our Faves Pro app.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. We'll include all the links to your company and to you and all the social media on the show notes, so go and check those out. But thank you so much, Ulla, for being on the show today. Thanks.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to the Real Capitalist Podcast. If you loved today's interview and want to support the show, please leave a 5-star review wherever you're tuning in from today. To learn more and read today's show notes, go to therealcapitalist.com/podcast. You can also follow us on social media @TheRealCapitalist. See you next week with another great interview.